This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. Tens of millions of Americans this weekend will pretty much be in lockdown as three large states place severe restrictions on people's ability to move around outside their homes. It is a dramatic action aimed at stemming the spread of the new coronavirus in the United States. California was the first state to act and is being followed this weekend by Illinois and New York. The stay-at-home order affects upwards of 70 million people and thousands upon thousands of businesses. Two more states, Connecticut and Oregon, appear ready to make a similar move. All of this as the COVID-19 pandemic leaves its mark. The number of cases in the U.S. is nearing 20,000. At least 260 people have died. New York has the highest number of cases in the country, over 10,000, the majority in New York City. Worldwide, estimates of confirmed coronavirus cases range up to 280,000 and more, at a cost of more than 11,000 fatalities. Spain said today it's recorded 235 new cases, the biggest ever for one day, upping the total count to about 20,000. The death toll in Spain tops 1,000. Bavaria has become the first German state to order its people to stay at home, except for travel to work or to buy food. Colombia is the first nation in South America to issue the same directive. In Africa, 40 of the continent's 54 countries report they have coronavirus cases. Meanwhile, in China, authorities say there have been no homegrown cases of COVID-19 for the third straight day, and there are signs of a society returning to some degree of normalcy with a slow lifting of movement restrictions. Beijing is now focused on dealing with coronavirus being carried into the country from the outside, which could set off a new wave of infections. The epicenter of the current pandemic is Italy. More than 700 people in the country have reportedly died of the virus today alone. More news at voanews.com. To stay up to date on all the day's news, you can always go online. From Washington, this is VOA News. Britain is asking 65,000 retired nurses and doctors to return to work to help fight the coronavirus. The UK's caseload stands at close to 4,000, with 177 deaths. Infectious diseases consultant Dr. Sarah Logan says doctors in Britain, as elsewhere, are working to flatten the curve of the new COVID-19 cases.
The shape of that curve is what we've been doing very hard to change, working very hard to change in the UK, because the impact on the NHS of a peak of admissions and a peak of people getting the virus all at the same time would overwhelm NHS.
Meanwhile, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has ordered his country's pubs and restaurants to shut down. He had been criticized for not taking the action earlier. Here in Washington, work is continuing on a coronavirus aid package in the U.S. Senate, which is being negotiated with the White House. At stake is a plan to put at least $1 trillion into an emergency rescue fund to help people and businesses weather the economic distress brought on by the pandemic and to shore up the economy itself. U.S. President Donald Trump is giving himself high marks for his handling of the pandemic, this despite the fact there are continuing calls for desperately needed medical supplies. We have a report from the AP's Tim McGuire.
A spokesman for the Association of Public Health Labs says they are seeing dwindling supplies of chemical components and swabs needed to collect patient samples. The group and two others that represent other public health organizations are recommending scaling back testing until the shortages are resolved. Harvard Global Health Professor Dr. Ashish Jha says there should be up to 150,000 tests a day. Currently, it stands at about 20,000. He expects that number to increase as large commercial labs ramp up their testing. Tim McGuire, Washington.
He was best known for American country and pop, but he was famous the world over. Singer Kenny Rogers has died. He was 81. We get a report from the AP's Julie Walker. You got to know.
Kenny Rogers died at home in Georgia of natural causes, according to his representative. The performer with the husky voice and silver beard sold tens of millions of records, won three Grammys, and was the star of TV movies based on The Gambler. In 2015, he told the AP about his crossover music. I could never be better than Johnny Cash or Willie or Waylon at what they did, so I found something that I could do that didn't invite comparison to them. And I think people thought it was my desire to change country music, but that was never my issue. I'm Julie Walker.
More news online at voanews.com. There is also a convenient, easy-to-use mobile app. Gene Randall, VOA News.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We are yet to record an official incident, but this is part of the precautionary steps we are taking as a government to ensure that we keep the coronavirus out of our country. Already, it has come so uncomfortably and perilously close, particularly in our neighboring countries, and we don't want to become fans now.
The Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio suspends travel for all government officials.
The signing of the alliance between the Malawi Congress Party and the UTM Party was so successful, it was so colorful, but above all, this is what Malawians were expecting. So Malawians are grateful that their aspirations have been met by the signing of this alliance. Announcements, including who is going to lead the alliance, will be made in due course.
The Malawian main opposition party announces an alliance with incumbent Vice President Dr. Saulos Chilime's UTM party ahead of the presidential election rerun.
The security people came out violently and they were threatening to kill us. And they told us to get out. And they accused us of having been paid by the Patriotic Front. Now, this was crazy because if we had been paid, the Patriotic Front would have provided some form of security.
And the Zambian Agency for Persons with Disabilities condemns an attack on its members by the security detail of main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Sierra Leonean Information Minister says the West African country has closed its airport to flights from COVID-19 infected countries. This after the president suspended all official foreign travel for government officials until further notice. Sierra Leone has not yet officially recorded a case of the coronavirus, although the country's immediate neighbors, including Liberia and Guinea, have patient cases with the disease. Health experts say the Sierra Leonean government acted proactively in closing its airport, but some also expressed concern that the virus could be brought by cross-border business activities and the movement of people. But Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Soare tells me President Julius Maada Bio has deployed the military to the borders as part of the enforcement measure to combat the disease.
Peter, you are right. We are yet to record an official incident, but this is part of the precautionary steps we are taking as a government to ensure that we keep the coronavirus out of our country. Already, in the words of His Excellency, it has come so uncomfortably and perilously close, particularly to our neighboring countries, Guinea and Liberia. We don't want to be caught pants down.
And we know Sierra Leone has some borders with neighboring countries and with people moving freely back and forth. How is your government trying to address that challenge too in view of the COVID-19 coronavirus disease?
Well, His Excellency, in a televised address on Wednesday night, did order the deployment with immediate effect of the army to all land and sea borders with neighboring countries to ensure that they police the movement of people from and into this country. That is a very significant move because we want to ensure that we do not leave any of our guards open, which will provide an opportunity to let in anybody exhibiting COVID-19 symptoms.
So far, how would you classify the preparation of your government in anticipation of this disease? Because sometimes some people might not clearly display symptoms yet might be carrying the disease.
Well, His Excellency President Bio, a former military person, believes in planning ahead of major disasters like this. There has been a lot of background preparations. Recently, he went on a personal assessment tour of facilities at the 34 military barracks, where we have a top-notch virology lab, a holding center, and a treatment center. He also came over to the Freetown International Airport to assess the state of readiness. So yes, we have done a lot of preparations, but we are also mindful of the fact that even some of the most prepared countries around the world with very sophisticated healthcare delivery systems have been caught quite by surprise. This disease is ravaging everybody, so we are not letting our guards down. That is why in his state broadcast a couple of days ago, he called on several unions across the divide to rally around so that we could keep the coronavirus out of our country. And in the most unlikely event that ever surfaces here, we should be able to deal with it and deal with it decisively. So, I mean, he ended the speech on a very optimistic note. He noted that this is not the very first time we have come under attack. We had a very debilitating civil war. We rallied together as Sierra Leoneans. We have had natural disasters. We triumphed. We have had Ebola. We thrived. So this is not going to be an exception. That was a clarion call he made. And you could already see the manifestation. Sierra Leoneans are rallying, you know. So in the firm belief that a united people can never be defeated.
How are Sierra Leoneans reacting to this new directive from the government after President Madabew basically directed that all official government travels be suspended until further notice as part of the effort to combat this disease?
The cocktail of measures announced by His Excellency to stop any incidents of the coronavirus in Sierra Leone have been warmly welcomed by everybody, including government officials whose official travels abroad have been suspended, because everybody believes that the first priority in life is self-preservation. You have to look after life and limb first before any other thing. Of course, government members of the public have also been advised to ensure that they limit travels to the extremely compelling ones, right? Quite a cocktail of other measures, public gatherings, above.
Mohamed Rahman Soare is the Sierra Leonean Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown.
Civil society and opposition groups in Guinea plan to undertake a nationwide demonstration to stop Sunday's referendum. Attorney Thieno Sulemani Balde, a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution and president of the board of the Research Institute on Democracy and Rule of Law, says the referendum is a plan by President Alpha Conde to change the constitution to enable him seek additional terms in office after his second and final term expires. This after the president postponed the legislative election and referendum. Opposition and civil society groups plan to boycott Sunday's polls with nationwide protests. They are also calling on the international community to impose targeted sanctions on the president and his inner circle. For more about the plans by the opposition and civil society groups to stop Sunday's referendum, I reach Atenu Thieno Sulemani Balde, a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution and president of the board of the Research Institute on Democracy and Rule of Law.
So, Thieno Balde, tomorrow, Sunday, there will be a referendum postponed by the president. How are civil society groups and opposition groups reacting to this referendum on Sunday?
The general understanding of the majority of civil society organizations and the political parties is to boycott the elections and to do whatever it takes legally to prevent them from happening. This is the idea. Since yesterday, we have had already several arrests from the security forces, and also we have had several violences in different parts of the capital, including one of the main military camps in Conakry, Kangal Fayaya. So right now, no one knows how things will evolve, but the principle for the majority of civil society organization and the political parties is to do whatever it takes to prevent the election from happening. It's the idea.
But what specific actions will you be taking to prevent it from happening, since the security officers will be deployed across the country to ensure that the referendum goes smoothly on Sunday?
Peter, you have seen throughout the story, when the people decide, the people mobilize, no one and no security forces can stop them. Remember what they call the Prince of the Bastille in France during the revolution and in so many other countries. Yes, they can use violence, they can use force, but when a people decide, they mobilize, no one can stop them, no one can arrest them. So we hope that people will realize the importance of this struggle, and they will mobilize peacefully and in a number of that no one can really stop them in most of the cities in Guinea. It's the only way that we can stop this process.
Attorney Thieno Sulemani Balde is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution and president of the board of the Research Institute on Democracy and Rule of Law. He spoke with me from the capital, Conakry. The main opposition Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, says the official alliance with incumbent Vice President Dr. Saulos Chilima's United Transformation Movement, or UTM, will ensure victory in the upcoming presidential election rerun. The alliance also involves other smaller opposition parties, including that of former President Joyce Banda's People's Party, PP. Analysts say the alliance poses a significant challenge to incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika's re-election prospects. The alliance also coincides with a new cabinet position, a move analysts say appear to be calculated to take away the appeal of the unity of the opposition parties. To learn more about the prospects of the newly announced alliance of the opposition parties, I reach Maurice Munthali, the spokesperson for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party, MCP.
So, Maurice, how did the official alliance, as adored by the MCP and the UTM, go?
Peter, the signing of the alliance between Malawi Congress Party and the UTM Party was so successful. It was so colorful. But above all, this is what Malawians were expecting. So Malawians are grateful that their aspirations have been met by the signing of this alliance. It went on well. Somehow people felt they are left in suspense because there was no mention, no announcement of who is going to lead this alliance or who will be the running mate. But that is not an issue at all, because what Malawians wanted was to hear that the alliance is there and it is real. So by signing the alliance agreement yesterday, Malawians have known that the alliance is real and that Malawi Congress Party, with all the parties that are together in the alliance with the Malawi Congress Party, are going to be working together with the UTM and all those parties which are together with UTM. So that is what I can say of now. But Malawians should expect is that announcements, including who is going to lead the alliance, will be made in due course.
So, Maurice, when will Malawians know who will lead the alliance and who will be the partner ahead of the much-anticipated presidential election rerun?
What the two principals, Dr. Lazarus Chakwera and Dr. Saulos Chilima, have always said is that this alliance does not prioritize the positions per se, including who is going to be the leader and who is going to be the partner, despite the fact that the two principals know, together with our followers, that there has to be a leader and that the leader has to be announced. But what we had to do yesterday was to do the first thing first. And the first thing was to assure Malawians that the alliance is real and that the two parties, together with all our allies, are going to be working together towards the 19 May 2020 fresh election and beyond. As to the leader of the alliance and the partner, the two principals, together with all our followers, know that there is urgency attached to this. So we are not just going to be delaying the announcement for the sake of it, but we wanted to do the first thing first. The announcement is going to be made soon.
So, Morris, does that mean the official unveiling of the announcement that the UTM and MCP are forming an alliance mean the official beginning of campaigning of the joint forces between the UTM and the MCP in the run-up to the presidential election rerun?
Of course, the signing of the alliance itself has sent a strong message out there. And in itself, it is a big campaign, because this is what Malawians have been waiting for. And to hear that the two parties, together with the other parties that are in the alliance, are going to be working together, has sent a strong signal that we are now headed for a new Malawi. So the message has gone, but in regard to what form our campaign is going to take from now on, we are going to be deciding on that as time goes on. But suffice to say that already we are campaigning. We are sending out messages in several forms. We will be announcing each time we hold meetings as to what strategy and what form our campaign is going to take.
You talked about other political parties apart from the UTM. How many political parties are there in your alliance? And two, members of the ruling DPP and the UDF alliance are saying they are not perturbed by this alliance and that they won the election first round despite the annulment by the Constitutional Court. What is your reaction to that?
This means, therefore, that the Grand Alliance has got nine parties altogether. So all the followers, supporters of the nine parties, are going to vote for one candidate who is going to be announced to lead the Grand Alliance towards the 19 May 2020 election and beyond. What the Constitutional Court said in its ruling on 3 February 2020 was that the 21 May 2019 election was marred with irregularities, and that the petitioners had proof enough that the president, Peter Mutharika, was not duly elected to that effect. So if the DPP are saying they won the election, I think they do not even know what the Constitutional Court ruled upon and what the judgment itself is saying. So they didn't win. Peter Mutharika did not win, and that's why we're going for fresh election this time again.
So what should the people of Malawi expect from this alliance? Because it appears it's going to be a competitive election between one alliance from the ruling party and another alliance from the opposition. What should be the expectations of Malawians?
Malawians should expect that through this Grand Alliance, they will have a leader, a president, who is going to be a servant of the people of Malawi and not a boss. Somebody who is never going to dictate terms on Malawians, but a president who is ready to serve them. From this Grand Alliance, Malawians should expect that we are all going to be united. We are a small country and we are just one family. But right now we are so divided up according to regions and tribes. Through this Grand Alliance, people must expect that we're going to prosper together. It will be a Malawi that is going to be fair for everybody else. The whole country is going to enjoy development and the national cake. And through this alliance, there will be no corruption whatsoever. and it will be a Malawi that is going to be corruption free. And above all, everybody is never going to be above the law. Everybody must be under the law. So there will be rule of law in this.
Maurice Munthali is the spokesperson for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party, MCP. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. The Zambian Agency for Persons with Disabilities has condemned an attack on its members by the security detail of main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, or UPND. The group said one of its members was injured when she was attacked with stones. This as the group attempted to present a petition to the main opposition leader at his private residence. Local media reports that the group had no prior appointment with the opposition leader but requested to be allowed to present the petition. They were then told to book an appointment with the opposition leader another time. They declined the advice and insisted the matter was urgent. Some Zambians have expressed outrage towards what they described as the mistreatment of the persons with disability. Others say the action of the group appeared politically motivated since they could have presented their petition at the secretariat of the opposition party. But Julian Mwapi, president of the Zambian Agency for Persons with Disability, tells me the attack was outrageous and unacceptable.
So, Julian, we understand some of your members were attacked yesterday when you went to the residence of the main opposition leader, Hakainde Hichilema. Tell me what happened.
Yes, Peter. Yesterday, we went to lobby. As you know, human rights don't come easily. So we went to lobby to the president of UPND, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema. And the reason why we went to his residence was because the issue was a time issue. The matter was before parliament. It was just adjourned from the previous day to yesterday. So the aspect of trying to seek an appointment, we thought this is too time sensitive. So let's go to this leader's house. And when we arrived at the residence, we were aware that we didn't have an appointment. So we asked the guard to say we would like to see him and would like if he would come out. But that was in a way to say, if you allow us in, we will come. We didn't have anything on us. We didn't have security. We didn't have anything, not even a placard. What we wanted to do was deliver a petition to him. If we had placards, we were chanting slogans, it would have been a different situation because then that would have been combative. But we went with just a petition to say we need your support as a leader, and knowing that right now human rights are all about equality, and we needed that equal representation in political and public life. So we arrived, the guard said, no, he's in a press conference, so we'll have to ask the SG to come through and address you. We got off our vehicles and we actually sat out. We didn't get into his premises. We sat outside the gate on the lawn. Others were sleeping, others... For us, it wasn't even a threat. We didn't think we were doing something that would result in what actually happened. So we were surprised as the media was going out of the residence and they were getting the interviews to say, what are you actually here for? And we're just giving them a position to say, no, this is one of the biggest leaders in the opposition. And we believe that we need to engage him if we are going to have our rights realized. The security people came out violently and they were threatening to kill us. And they told us to get out. And they accused us of having been paid by the Patriotic Front. Now, this was crazy because if we had been paid, the Patriotic Front would have provided some form of security because they could have known that this is going to turn political. But in our innocence, We went there with the spirit of Ubuntu. That's what basically happened. So when we were told, get out, we started mounting on vehicles because really it wasn't confrontational. And we believed that if we are told, go away, we will go away. So we were ready to mount on vehicles. They kept threatening. And that's how they picked up stones and started hitting the vehicle. And one stone actually hit the woman. So this is basically what happened.
So were you able to finally present your petition to Hakainde Hichilema or any of his officials at his residence?
Unfortunately, no, we were not able to present the petition. We left without seeing any official. We were just talking to the security people.
Is that why members of your group are now accusing Hakainde Hichilema and perhaps the main opposition UPND of not caring for people who are disabled or physically challenged?
A lot of the reaction of lack of care comes from the sentiments that have come from the UPND towards the same event, which was rather unfortunate. The first comment we heard that it wasn't true, we hadn't been there to the residence. And then today, the Secretary General of the party, UPND, says we should just wait for social cash transfer as persons with disabilities.
Well, I also understand that your presence there appeared to be politically motivated by the ruling party just to create the impression and the that the UPND leader and the party doesn't care for the people with the physically challenged, and that you should have booked an appointment just like anybody else, and perhaps the UPND leader was not aware of what was happening because you dealt with security and the information was not relayed to him. How do you respond to that?
My presence there could not have been politically engineered. I refuse that because if it was, the politics in this country are very toxic. They should have provided me with security, but we went without that. So that assertion or that assumption should be gotten rid of. It's not the first time that I'm talking about human rights in this country. I've talked about the killing of albinos. I've talked about all the injustices, so it's not true. And then the issue to say he didn't get the problem that was happening and we dealt with security, that one could have been supported if the Secretary General didn't come out the way he has come out.
So what are you going to do now? Because you still need representation. You still need your voice to be heard. You still need the support from both the government and the opposition regarding the petition that you are putting across so your interests will be safeguarded in this effort to amend the constitution. What is your next line of action?
Right now, parliament has been adjourned, and we hope to speak to other opposition members of parliament to ensure that they are firm and truly understand what we want. But for the UPND, we would rather not go back because I think it has been clear enough where they stand. They believe persons with disabilities should just wait for handouts and they cannot be partners in the political and public life. Yes.
Wouldn't your current stance of not working with the UPND, the main opposition party, defeat your purpose of having support from all institutions in the country, both opposition, civil society groups, and the government, in your quest to have your rights and protected and respected?
Peter, the world over, parties or people vying for political office do have principles and policies that they sell out to people. And we have not heard any presentation to us as persons with disabilities by the UPND, and they've never made a comment about how they would care for us. So this now just confirms that in their running of government, they do not have an inclusive policy, and they don't believe in equality for persons with disabilities. But this would definitely not affect anything. It's just that it opens our eyes that this is not a party that we should associate ourselves with or rely on.
Julian Mwape is the president of the Zambian Agency for Persons with Disabilities. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka.
Listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Kote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, this Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Mama. Baby super, na sitima ye gwanja kira. Baby care, baby super, awaka bitu niringana.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America.
From the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali and reporter and producer Douglas Impoga. And remember, as the elders say, when children are learning to walk and fall down over 50 times, they never think to themselves, maybe this isn't for me. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.